This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
8:14, chilly Wednesday morning, and it's going to get even colder today. Temperature is going to fall. Rain's pretty much, for the most part, done. And then the temperature is going to fall throughout the day, and the winds are going to pick up, and it's going to feel even colder than it does now. Eventually, lows tonight, 32 on the south shore, hard freeze on the north shore. Same for tomorrow night. Friday morning, highs tomorrow only of 46, 48 Friday, 56 Saturday, 54 Sunday. But Brooke Glazer tells us from WWL Louisiana that the parade should get in. No rain, just bundle up, as she says, purple, green, and cold. Ronald Serpas joins us now, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent, head of the Nashville City Police, Washington State Police, and more. How you doing, sir?
Tommy, I am great. How are you? You ready for Mardi Gras?
I am all set up. I got my costume ready, and I got my ladders chained already on St. Charles Avenue, and I got the crew going out there today to build the big podium, the reviewing stand. My property extends from, I don't know if I told you that story or not, but I went out there back in the day when I didn't have to work on Mardi Gras, and with the family to set up, and somebody was already there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they were telling their friend, my property extends from that telephone pole over there to the mailbox. And I thought that interesting. That's a true story. Honestly is. Our property, that's what it was. Our property extends from the mailbox over to the telephone pole. Let's talk about...
Well, I wanted you to know I've been preparing to. I've been working on my shoulders so that
good.
I can carry you. You'll
good.
Be comfortable.
It's not the shoulders as much as the legs, the quads. You got to get ready for those squats. Let's talk about, because Chief Serpas like 6'8", and I'm 5'0", and he holds me on his shoulders for the parades, which is nice of him, and it looks kind of stupid for a couple of guys our age, but what the heck, we get a lot of beads, and that's what counts. Let's talk about a Sierra One event and Mardi Gras, because they would seem to me at opposite ends of the continuum.
Well, I'm anxious to see, as well as I'm sure most people, you know, what are going to be some of the solution offer, and that's fine. You know, we always want things to get better. But I'm reminded, I saw something in the news last week, and maybe you saw it, where there was going to be some extra authority granted to the police department to clear the neutral ground of people's property and those kinds of things before the parades. Tommy, I don't want to sound like an old guy, but, you know, we have been doing that since 1980, my very first Mardi Gras parade. The culture of New Orleans is that people are going to put their living room furniture, their kitchen furniture, their dining room furniture on the neutral ground. Do we want it? No. Have we been working with the culture of the community for 45 years to stop it? Yes. Have we been successful in stopping it? No. I mean, these are the kind of things that are important, because a Sierra One event tends to look like something that's far easier to control. The Superdome. There's only so many ways in and out. Mm-hmm. NASCAR, if they did it, the Sierra One at NASCAR, they had, 300,000 people. There's ways to do in and out. But the Mardi Gras experience is so intertwined into the streets and cultures and neighborhoods and families of Mardi Gras. I'm anxious to see if there's some other ideas, and I'm sure if they're safe and good, I know people would want to take them. But you can't look at that unless you have some recognition of the 100-year history of the intertwine of just that family, friends, blocks, neighborhoods, and how they experience this wonderful, uniquely New Orleans event.
And with that being said, you know, I was talking to J.P. Morrell, and he said at the city council, he told NOPD, giving him discretion, maybe that's what you're talking about. It's like, well, you know, you got all the stuff on your minds besides the new, and you got the manpower issues as you've always had, or woman power, however you want to say
God.
It. But you've got, well, anyway, but you've got that, you can get to that in a second, but to enforce the new rules that we put in, tell me about all of that and your reaction just now.
I haven't had a chance to see the new rules. I thought that it was mostly you have more power and discretion to control neutral ground. And I may totally be missing that, but that's what I thought I read. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, whatever new power the council is going to give, it's going to be interesting, because if it was that important, why hadn't it been asked for before? Has it already been asked for or done? You know, one of the things about history is it does repeat itself. Many years ago, when I was chief, I begged the city council to allow us to put, you know, on Canal Street, you have those metal barriers, the metal wires that create a barrier so people. My administration as deputy chief and my administration as superintendent, we begged the city, why don't we stretch these things along St. Charles Avenue, have easy breaks at the neutral ground, so we can at least keep people in between the intersections from getting into the street, which is dangerous, and we do have the horrible events where people get run over by floats because they got into the middle of the street.
You're talking about the interlocking barricades that the recruits go and put out on a truck, those things?
No. Think about on Canal Street, you have the cables.
Oh, okay.
And the cables run across the neutral ground. Mm-hmm. I should have said cables, I'm sorry. So when Richard was here as chief, I was the chief operations, we begged the city to cable the parade route. No, we're not going to do it. When I was superintendent, I came back, I said, we really ought to, especially now since we have one route, we really ought to cable this route, because then the police ability to keep people out of the middle of the block going in front of the floats is such a public safety question. And then on the intersections, you can still get people through at the end. But there was no will to do that then, probably because some of the cultural expectations they experienced. So if those come up as ideas, some of the ideas that come up may be things that have been tried and discarded, or things that have been asked for that were never given. And if SEER can help with that, maybe that's a good thing.
I don't know how. I guess the question is, and we can talk about this when we come back. I understand, you know, SEER one event, SEER one event, SEER one event. And that sounds great. But I don't know how that can even apply to Mardi Gras, because it would seem as though everything in the Mardi Gras is what SEER one against would want to prohibit. So you can talk more when we come back. And we'll also talk about the new rules. What the council said was that we have these new rules in place, tents, tarps, enclosures, sofas, scaffolding, all that stuff. But we're going to, this year, because of the Bourbon Street attack and the SEER one event, give you discretion in enforcing all of that. Although it seems as though we're back to the same old thing that you're talking about with either you're going to enforce it or you're not. And you can't tell somebody don't put a tarp down or confiscate their tarp. And then 20 minutes later, somebody comes down and puts a tarp, and then they're right where the other person was, and we're back to where we started. 821 traffic now, WWL. 827, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with our friend Ronald Surpass, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, on the job with NOPD for a long time, started pounding the beat, and then he rode a horse, rode a motorcycle, done it all, rising to the superintendent. Let me ask you this, Chief, when it comes to SEER 1 event, we heard so much about it, but it just seems like, okay, we made the announcement, but really, what does...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
does it mean? Because when you look at what's involved with a SEER 1 event, that kind of is contrary to what Mardi Gras is, right?
I think there's a very important point you made there, Tom. And I would say this. I did 25 Mardi Gras, like you said, walked the beat on Burger Street, rode a horse, did the motorcycles, moving the floats, as did hundreds of other police officers. Mm-hmm. We don't think we know everything, but we have 25 years of doing this. So there's going to be a combination of, I've been there, done that, it might not work, folks. Or this is an interesting piece of surveillance technology that you have that we never knew about in the 1990s, the 2000s, the 2020s. So there could be things, there really could. But I think if, you know, sometimes the process is our local people must not know what they're doing. Let's bring in somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that's fair, except that you can't forget that the local people have done these Mardi Gras parades for hundreds of years. Again, me, 25 years from walking a beat on Bourbon Street to being the chief of police. There are things that we know that are inherent in the relationship of the community and the event, not the techniques of security only, but the culture. What is it to be a New Orleanian? What is it to be a second line? What is it to be a Mardi Gras crew, an Indian Mardi Gras crew? These are the kind of things that we have decades of experience that have to be melded with what might be new technologies and techniques from a nationwide perspective, and hopefully the two can come together. My point is, nobody can come to New Orleans or nobody can go to another person's city and say, we really don't know what you've been doing, but this is what we think you ought to do without listening to what this is what we've been doing.
Let me get
a better picture.
Yeah, let me say it this way. I guess this is what I'm thinking. Mardi Gras is no more susceptible to a terrorist attack than it was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, last year. The only thing that's changed is a guy committed an act of terror on Bourbon Street on New Year's Day, right? So
I think there's a lot to that, yes.
So I think, I don't know how, do you let this one guy and his terrible act change everything that everybody else does? Because, again, I don't think anybody that would be looking to commit an act of terror would not have already identified the weaknesses that Mardi Gras present. Would that be accurate, Chief, or not?
Well, I think it's very accurate. I think you have to marry what people in this city know is the experience with people who might have greater expertise on issues that we don't. But you have to recognize that this is a cultural event in a community. If you go back to COVID, we were resisting that police officers were being made to enforce laws that COVID was demanding that the citizens refused to recognize as legitimate. Mm-hmm. So you might run into the same problem here where people with good intentions, like we did, don't put stuff on the neutral ground on Park Avenue. They didn't listen. Were we going to go arrest all those people? Would that have been the answer? I don't think so.
I guess I just got to thinking about it. It's like, well, what's changed really since last Mardi Gras? The only thing that's changed is this evil guy decided to drive his truck down Bourbon Street on New Year's Day. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate your time.
The other thing that's changed is the city's continuing inability to hire officers back up to 1,200 or 1,600. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
No, and you're right. That's exactly right. Thank you, sir. Ronald Surpass. We'll take a break, come back, talk about child care and couples and so forth. Right now, time for WWL First News. 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. If you've listened for these decades, you know that I am very concerned about education because that is the key, I think, to fixing a lot of the problems that we have in society. And that starts at a very early age, and as a result of that, that has also ramifications for the economy in general as it relates to parents. And I'm going to invite Madeline Karst-Batson to join us now, Research and Policy Director for Louisiana Policy Institute of Children, to join us because she can explain it a lot better than I just tried to. How are you doing, Madeline?
Hi, good morning. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
I got to tell you, and I hope this is not inappropriate, but I've never seen that name before, and I think it's a beautiful name, Madeline.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Named after my dad named Matt. So,
well, there you go. That's awesome. I think that's great. Did you know any other kids named Madeline?
Not spelled for sure. Not spelled the way I spelled it, but
that's great. And a great way to honor your dad as well. Let's talk about dads and moms and cost and availability of child care in Louisiana about this new survey. What does it say, Madeline?
Yeah, well, thank you for having us to share. We are really pleased to be able to release our report once again. You know, we started surveying parents across Louisiana starting in 2020 to really kind of understand what the impacts of COVID were. And then we realized that childcare is an issue for families inside or outside of COVID. So we have continued to try to capture, you know, what parents are trying to navigate as they consider having kids, trying to be in the workforce, and what are the decisions they're making and where are the pressure points for them. And so what we found this year, and really what we found every year, is that the majority of parents who have children under five in Louisiana are working or attending school full time and
say that
outside
again.
Of their home.
I don't want to lose that, Madeline. That number again, say it again.
Sure. Most of them, 80% actually of our respondents who are parents with children under five, say that they are working full time or in school for full time outside of their homes. And so what that means is that, you know, if most of our parents are working full time outside of the home, that means their kids who are under five, understanding they can't watch themselves, mm-hmm. are going somewhere. And so what we found is that while majority of the parents have their children under five in child care centers or center-based learning environments, they still are really struggling with being able to afford that child care while trying to work and provide for their families. And so that's really why we titled the report the way we did. It's called Caught in the Middle. It's because what we really found in our research is that that's how parents are feeling. We've even heard from parents saying in the report that, or in the survey, they shared with us that, you know, they quit their jobs to have their child and to care for them when they were infants. They had always planned to go back to work, but that was a year ago that they had their kid and they realized, oh, I can't afford childcare, so I can't go back to work, even though that might be something that's important for them and their families. So that's really the gist of what we found. There's a lot underneath, but wanted to give you a chance to respond to that so far.
Well, I'll tell you this, just being honest, as I try to always be, having been blessed, my kid's 28 now, but having been blessed to have a family member that was loved and trusted to watch over the kid was a blessing. And I think a lot of people that have that don't quite understand the challenges that parents that don't have that are facing. Agree?
Correct. Yes. And we did find that, I mean, we polled any parent in the state with kids under five, even parents who themselves stay at home to watch their kids. But we did find that the majority of people who responded, which we had over 3,400 respondents across the state. And so we really do feel like we got a snapshot at least of what's going on. And the top options for care were a child care center, their child, you know, is eligible for a pre-K seat in a elementary setting, so like in a K-12 setting, but like in a pre-K-4 program, or they're in a family child care provider space where, you know, maybe that's a neighbor who has a small child care business out of their home, but the majority of people are not relying on their family, friends, and neighbors to have care, which tells us that that option isn't available for them. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is that when we looked at, okay, so you're having a hard time affording childcare. Over half of our respondents said that. When we look at our highest income brackets, which is up to $150,000 for the family income, we are still seeing that there's difficulty with affording care.
Give me that number again, please, Madeline.
Sure. Parents making up to $150,000 indicated that they struggled to afford childcare. But at the same time, over half of our respondents said they have to have childcare in order to go to work.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up there when we come back, because if you're making up to $150,000 and you're struggling to afford it, you can only imagine what parents that are making $60,000 are going through, or $30,000 or what have you. So there's also, when we come back, we'll talk about it. One thing is paying for childcare and being affordable. The other is it being available, because, again, I was blessed. We were blessed to have a family member that you trusted. But how many of these places, how are they regulated? How many are available? Is it daycare? Is it babysitting? Is there any early education going on? It's a very complicated problem, I think, a very serious problem with some long-term effects, because this to me is like planting a seed, and you can either plant a I'm not trying to get wax philosophic here, Madeline, but you can either plant a weed or you can plant a flower, right? And one of the two is going to come up. We'll pick it up there when we come back. Our guest is Madeline Karst-Batson, Research and Policy Director for Louisiana Policy Institute for Children, talking about the affordability and availability of child care. Tell me on the Okunard Jeweler Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870, if you would, please. If you have a young child in your family or under five or maybe parent or grandparent or friend's neighbor, how do they take care of the child? I'd like to know. 852 traffic now, WWL. 8:58 now, just a couple of minutes left with Madeline Karst-Batson, Research Policy Institute for the Louisiana Policy Institute of Children. I think maybe, Madeline, you're going to have to come back because we don't have really enough time to cover this, because I think it's a very important thing. Somebody texted in, me and my wife have a two-year-old, soon-to-be three-year-old, lucky enough to have my father works from home, able to watch him every day. Now there's soon-to-be three trying to enroll in a private school, could take every dollar that we have. Talk about, if you will, in the time that we have left, Madeline, how do you fix this? Is it about affordability, availability, both?
It is a little bit of both. We do know that our quality rating system for our child care centers is top 20 actually in the nation for its validity. And so we know that when child care centers are ranked as high quality, that they actually are, which means that, you know, centers are wanting to care for more kids, but with the high expense that it is, a lot of families just can't afford it unless they have access to some sort of subsidy. And that really means what it boils down to is that we really need state, federal, and local governments to find ways to invest in child care so that we can have the Child Care Assistance Program, which is one of our subsidy programs, able to take more parents so that they can, you know, not have to wonder if they have to go to work or send their child to child care or if they're going to put food on their table even. Some of our respondents talked about that. They're worried about being able to afford other basic expenses because child care costs so much. And so we know that the centers are out there. They served a lot of kids during COVID. And so we know that the capacity is there. We just really need more families to get access to assistance in order to be able to really fuel our workforce, fuel our economy, and then put their kids in a high-quality center where they are learning.
Yeah, I would like you to
prepared for kindergarten.
Come back and spend an hour, because this leads to that, leads to that, leads to that, leads to that. Thank you, Madeline Karst-Batson, Research Policy Director, Louisiana Policy Institute of Children. We'll come back, talk about name, image, and likeness, and where all that mess stands. Tommy Tucker, WWL.